The Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3.
So we talked about how it can be quite an interesting experience if you're part of a co-working office space and you've had that experience. But at the same time, it can be quite hit or miss, right?
Yeah, you've got to find the right space. I mean, there are people who are listening right now. I wonder whether you've ever actually stepped into a co-working office space. You've experienced it, wondered how it feels like to be in one. Does it even feel like a normal office? You know, it's a bit different, and it depends on sort of the makeup of your company, whether or not you want to use one.
It's quite interesting as well. You step inside and you see a lot of the younger generation working there because, you know, sort of embracing it, taking advantage of the space, looking hip and happening. Take, for example, this company called The Ordinary Co. It's a local jewelry label. It's one of these new generation businesses that's making use of this co-working space.
Yeah. How is not having a permanent office space working to their advantage? That's what we're going to explore. And how has WeWorks, and that's the space that The Ordinary Co. uses, co-working space, actually benefited the company? We have in the studio with us Monica Lai. She is the founder of The Ordinary Co. Welcome to the studio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Monica, could you start off by telling us a little bit about The Ordinary Co. and how do you use these co-working spaces?
So The Ordinary Co. I started 5 years ago when I first came out of university. So back then, I think e-commerce in Singapore was was just picking up speed. But there were a lot of shops that were selling clothes, but maybe not a lot selling accessories yet.
Okay.
So I saw a space that was open.
Right.
And got in. Yeah.
5 years on.
Still here.
Still here. And I guess it's a little early, but I'm just going to go for it. Are you profitable yet?
Yeah, we are. We actually, within like the first few months, we kind of broke even.
Wow.
And we're just, but yeah, definitely would not have lasted 5 years if we were not profitable.
Well done, congratulations.
So, yeah, something I noticed about your jewellery is you sort of hit this, so look, you're very young. And I read somewhere that actually the company may have started 5 years ago, but you've been dabbling with jewellery and providing something a bit different for a bit longer than that, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
So were you 16? Did I get that right?
Yeah, okay. I was. I learned how to make jewellery out of a library book in school, and I basically started my own online site. I coded it myself. Back then was the Live Journal days.
Inspiration.
Yeah.
Inspiration for all the girls out there who are listening, and all the parents who have young girls. Such a big push to get them into coding, all kids into coding. But anyway, that aside, I just love to push that. I think that also then reflects the price point of your jewellery, because you're hitting this market, which is very popular with students. It's right there. It's in that affordability category. How did you come up with that?
Yeah, I think fast fashion has always been, and being trendy as well, was always part of when I was growing up in university. It was being able to get the latest trends, which were still affordable. And that was mainly the ethos of the business for the first maybe 3 years. And since then, I've kind of grown up as well, and the brand has also grown, which is why we've launched our newest demi-fine jewelry line, which now sells maybe a bit more high quality, but also still affordable for what the consumer is getting.
And who exactly is this consumer that you are targeting? What's the age group, the demographic of this consumer?
So this consumer, it's not so much an age group, but more she's looking for something that's of quality and affordability and for the price that they are getting. So right now, I would say definitely more young adults, probably.
Fresh out of school.
Fresh out of school to the first few years of working.
Okay.
Up to 30, 35, maybe. They would be interested in purchasing the jewellery.
You said that you learned how to make jewellery from a book.
Yeah.
And then you basically coded your platform yourself, which is really impressive. So what I want to understand is, what was the motivation behind that? Were you just bored one day and thought, I'm going to pick up a book and learn how to make jewellery? And as for the coding, where did that come from? Did you have to go out of your way to learn?
My older sister, she's always been very, told me what to do with my life. So she told me, you should go into making jewellery. And I was just okay, I will learn that. And luckily for me, in school, there were resources to learn these things. So I really just went down and found it. I got the money to just go down to a store, buy the parts, and my mother gave me the money. And so after that, it was just selling online. And I don't know how it happened, but I managed to pay my mom back within a few months as well. And it was a good learning experience for me. And but I did stop there because I felt that I did feel that I didn't know enough about business yet to continue like growing this one. So I did go to university to learn business school, and then I stopped for a while because of studies. But after that, I felt the market was still empty, and I came back in again, and it changed.
Let's talk about where you're at right now, starting off making jewelry on your own. Right now, do you still do that, or is it outsourced to a factory?
It's outsourced to a factory now.
Where is this factory located?
This factory is somewhere in Asia.
Okay.
So that in itself is interesting. So you start this very young. You don't really know anything about business, but somehow you've kind of grown this organically to the point that now you're actually having jewelry made in another country. Like, how do you even go about that? Where do you begin to figure out what's going to be the best practice?
It's a lot of trial and error, I would say. I think I came into the business at a very good time as well for the Ordinary Core. So it was able to grow organically based on my own funding, because it was when social media just was beginning. So like Instagram was just starting out about 5 years ago. So it was definitely a lot less crowded than it is today. So getting your name out there when you're like an early mover was a lot easier to grow the business more economically and affordably without having to pump in a lot of cash. And I would say it's a very different story right now if I were to start this business in this crowded market on social media.
Where do your customers come from? Is it a majority Singapore, or because you are using social media to market this a lot, are you getting a lot around the region? Where are the popular areas that people buy your jewelry?
Definitely predominantly in Singapore.
Sure.
But I just got like an order from Exco. I sometimes get like orders from Israel, which is really amazing.
Oh.
And it does show the power of social media around the globe.
From Israel?
Yes, from Israel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And this sort of just comes out of the blue. And it's, as it normally through, like you were talking about, the social media channels, you know for sure that these are where it's coming from.
Definitely, because I don't target specifically ads in Israel. So I know that it's definitely a more organic approach.
Mm.
Through social media where they're finding out about the brand.
Monica, I was just remembering what you said earlier about how you started about 5 years ago, right? So I know of another sort of fashion brand that started around that time, and they went a very block shop sort of route. I'm sure you're familiar with this term.
Yes,
you rely heavily on social media. Which is stronger, Instagram or Facebook, or did you see a shift?
There definitely was a shift. I think initially when the brand first launched, it was a lot on Facebook, but also Instagram. But now definitely there's more of a tilt towards Instagram.
Are you aware that there are some, and in fact there are constant policy changes on Instagram, but right now I've read reports that they want to do away with the likes being reflected and focus more on comments. How do you, as a lady boss, as someone who's in this target audience, person who grew up with technology, how do you deal with the constant policy changes with all these social media? They're always tweaking data and how data is reflected.
I think it's always about staying ahead of the trend, so kind of figuring out what people are not doing.
Okay.
So like, for example, in the past, no one was really onto Instagram stories, so therefore I took a very like liberal approach in putting all my ads into Instagram stories versus in the usual Instagram feed. So that would kind of like, when you're the first mover, it helps encourage like more views, more traffic.
What do you think the next big marketing tool will be? Because you said if you hadn't done this 5 years ago, it's because you did it 5 years ago, you were able to take advantage of, you know, the sort of early starters on Instagram. But today, when you look forwards in terms of marketing, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so Instagram, like I said, it is getting crowded, but it's not per se like you expect a new platform to come out. Perhaps within the platform, there are new features that are coming out, which you might want to play with more and might want to maybe be the first mover in those features.
Things like TikTok and all that, I mean, it's trendy in other countries. It may or may not apply to your business model. Do you keep a close eye on that and wait for the right moment to jump in?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely am keeping an eye on TikTok. Trying to understand it as well. Like,
it's a bit hard to understand, that one.
Actually, you know, off air, I had this conversation with Ryan yesterday. I said, what is TikTok exactly? That shows you how old I am.
It's the clock, though.
size of a clock. But, you know, I think at the moment it's just kind of quirky videos. Anyway, Monica, you're, and we alluded to this a lot when we introduced you at the beginning, you're in the WeWork ecosystem.
Yes.
So we've talked about WeWork so much on this show, partly because WeWork has had quite a number of sort of financial issues. But that aside, what is it like to be in a WeWork co-working space?
So I've been in WeWork for about 2 years now.
Okay.
Since they opened in Singapore. And I've been enjoying the space a lot because it's actually helped my brand move forward from what was more targeting young university students now towards targeting adults who are working for a few years. And that's why I actually launched, after talking to women in the space and actually figuring out what they look for in jewelry, I realized that maybe the market as well is moving away from fast fashion, cheap, affordable stuff towards maybe, not say not affordable, still affordable, but maybe slightly higher quality, but a balance between that. And that's what I've done, which I've now, because I've talked to the people in the space and the women, and they told me what they wanted, I managed to launch my Demi-Fine line within the shop.
Right. So it was the people in WeWork that helped you decide to take up a space there? I mean, there are other players available.
Yeah, I was talking to the community people and they were very on board, and they were saying like, hey, you should take part in this creators market. It's part of, they do it maybe a few times a year, and that encouraged me to start like a pop-up shop inside the WeWork space, which was my first pop-up shop because I haven't done like a physical space in all my years of business, and that was 2 years ago, and they were like, just do it, like you can set it up. And I was just like, I mean, I've got nothing to lose, so I tried it, and since then I've actually managed to leverage on that pop-up shop to actually work with other brands to do pop-up shops, international brands.
So that's how it's supposed to work. That's an example of a positive way a co-working space works.
But I'm still a bit stuck on this point that there are other co-working businesses that, you know, where you could set up your office. WeWork, for some reason, has this sort of mystique around it. Is it mystique, or is it actually because the product delivers? What are they giving you that others aren't?
It's definitely, I would say, like the community and the far reach of the member network that I've been able to tap on and been able to expand my business in that sense. So the creators market has managed to reach out to like a whole ton of brands that I have actually been able to collaborate with as well on the side, and like they have a lot of connections.
How long more do you see yourself in this co-working space? Because at some point, and we have read how the idea behind WeWork the idea behind these co-working spaces is they give people a sort of a jumpstart platform, and eventually they move to their own offices when they grow big. Do you envision that for yourself, or are you just loving this space too much?
I am loving the space a lot. I really enjoy the fact that there's a lot of locations around Singapore, and that makes me more flexible, more able. Because for me, my business needs are that I require to be around town, and I need to be able to pop in whenever I can to just, and it's still a familiar space, it's still an environment that I'm used to. I know where the pantry is, I know what the cups look like, and I know where the community bar is, and I know that it's like a welcoming space even though it's different and around Singapore.
Yeah, so I know a friend who's based in London, and he runs a sort of a data analytics company, and they started off in WeWork, but they got too big, actually, and they had to move elsewhere. So who knows what's down the line. In terms of the Ordinary Co., what are your thoughts about the future? You know, I've checked out your stuff, I've looked at the website. The first question that comes to mind is clothes. Is that something you envisage yourself doing at some stage?
I do love clothes a lot as a woman, but I would say that at this stage, not so much because the market is quite crowded.
Sure.
And I would say that being a niche brand has helped the brand stand out a lot, because people know that The Ordinary Co. is for jewelry, and they come here.
Are you concerned about sustainability? Because this is a big thing for people now. And, you know, like I look at my jewelry collection, and I used to love buying a lot of costume jewelry, and I kind of regret it.
Well, you don't have to. The interesting thing about jewelry and metal is that metal is 100% recyclable. So technically, jewelry is very sustainable. It's probably more sustainable than clothing and cotton in that sense. So I would say.
But is it something that you think about, you know, inherently in your packaging and the way that you run the business? Has that become a big priority now?
Yeah, I have shifted the packaging towards using materials that are more sustainable, such as jute instead of cotton, which uses less water and grows faster so that it's less taxing on the land. But it's not a main focus of the brand right now, but I am looking at things.
I'm curious, in these co-working spaces, how big a topic is sustainability among the demographic of the people occupying these co-working spaces?
It's quite interesting. I think it is, in a sense, it is sustainable because instead of everyone having their own co-working space, we kind of like, we make sure we make the most out of the space that we have, that the office is. So I don't like have like an office just for myself. Like I'm sharing it with people. We are using the space like in a more economical sense.
So that on its own is a mindset going into it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like I wonder, because we're quite big on this subject, and I think as someone who's running a business, particularly a business like yours, and you will increasingly have to think about this. I'm curious, for example, you said, I've switched to jute. How would you know where to begin? How did you find out that that was a better source, that that would use less water? You know, how do you manage when you have to think about these things?
I am interested in the environment myself, but more like in the sense of looking at numbers, things that actually might help the earth. Right. So it's not so much a feeling, but I'm interested in reading research articles about the environment, and that's kind of where I started going into that.
Monica, talking about being in the business for 5 years, we have seen a rise in online companies going to brick and mortar. It's very nice to see a nice storefront and everything. What are your thoughts on this, or are you just waiting for the right time to do it, or never?
Well, I've been getting a lot of practice with the WeWork Creators Market, and so I definitely would like to move into that eventually. I do see that there is still a need for brick-and-mortar stores. People want to touch and feel things.
Yeah, it's become relevant again. Interesting. All right, we've been chatting with Monica Lai, founder of The Ordinary Co, in the studio with us. Thank you so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Monica.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.